Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
It's rare to see public protests in China. But just over a week ago, more than 1,000 people gathered in front of the People's Bank of China in Zhengzhou, the capital city of Henan Province. Many of them held Chinese flags in their hands. Some even held signs written in English, saying, "Against the violence and corruption of the Henan government." The crowd is shouting, "Henan banks, give my money back." Their bank accounts have been frozen since April, locking them out of their savings. And it's now been revealed that up to 40 billion yuan, that's 6 billion US dollars, has disappeared from four Henan banks. Gone. Local authorities claim a criminal gang had stolen the money. But it's what happened next that made world news. A large group of unidentified men in white shirts begin attacking the protesters, beating them with iron rods, kicking them, dragging them down the stairs. There's many questions. How did a gang manage to steal so much money from rural banks and get away with it? How did a large gang of violent men dressed in white not get identified and tracked in China's surveillance society? But the story has much bigger ramifications beyond the Henan province. It's about confidence in China's banking system.
The implications could be huge. People are asking, what about other local banks? If the local government allowed such illegal operations to exist for 10 years, would the same happen to other local banks in other areas?
That's what one expert had to say about it on SCMP.com. But he can't be identified because he's not authorized to speak to the media. But the Henan banking scandal is not the only story of people protesting about their money in China right now. There's another protest happening, but this one is happening in an estimated 90 cities across China. It's a protest that could shake the very foundations of China's economy. And it's happening in a year leading up to the single most important political meeting for Xi Jinping and his plans for China's future, the 20th National Congress of the Chinese Communist Party. Welcome to the Inside China podcast. My name is Holly Chick. In this episode, we're headed to our office in Beijing to hear more about the Henan Bank scandal and its continuing fallout. And before we get started, let me remind you that this is a developing story. My colleagues here in Hong Kong and in Beijing are constantly following up on what's happening and what is about to happen. And you can read all their latest stories and analysis on scmp.com. In this episode, I'm going to teach you a Chinese phrase, lan wei lou. Lan wei lou, in its direct translation, means broken tail or broken end building. It's a phrase that refers to the estimated 300 unfinished housing projects in more than 90 cities across China. A growing number of people who have taken out mortgages for apartments and flats in these housing projects have decided to stop paying any more money until the projects are finished. It's a massive consumer strike. But there's no street protests, no crowds of people shouting slogans. There is, however, a lot of activity online. The Chinese authorities are trying to block and delete. And we're going to find out more about that. But first, to Beijing.
A
Amanda Lee is based in our Beijing bureau and covers markets and the economy for the South China Morning Post. Amanda, we've got two very different stories here about banks in China. One that went global on news websites with a video showing hundreds of people protesting in front of a bank in Henan, demanding their money back, and then being fictitiously attacked by a gang of men dressed in white shirts. But there's also a much bigger protest happening in China, a protest with the potential to cause a huge problem for China's economy, and it's mostly happening in private. So Amanda, let's start with Henan. What happened? What happened there a little earlier ago?
So on April the 18th, savers of four rural banks in Henan and a couple of other rural banks in Anhui, they tried to log on to the system and to check their accounts. But they saw this message that says system upgrades ongoing. And since then, they've not been able to access their account. So all of their deposits have been frozen. It has been frozen for over 3 months, I think. And since then, they've been going out to Zhengzhou, the capital city of Henan province, protest. So that started in April, actually. So it's been ongoing. And the tension has been building up up until July the 10th.
So Amanda, these people haven't have access to their money since April, and it's been more than 3 months now. What's happened since then? Did people get their money back?
They formed groups on social media. So they've been very active. They're very proactive in telling people what's going on. So they've actually reached out to international media, so including the South China Morning Post, to tell us their stories. So that's how we found out that they weren't able to withdraw their deposits for over 3 months, nearly 4 months now.
What's the link here to local governments? Who is actually responsible for guaranteeing the deposits in these small banks?
So after the violent clash on July the 10th, the next day, the Henan branch of the Chinese banking and insurance regulator said that they would start to repay savers, especially starting with those that have less than 50,000 yuan worth of deposits. Now, some of them have been able to get the payment. Some of them haven't been able to. So they, again, the regulator has, they said something yesterday with an interview with state-owned media saying that they would be repaying all the principal from the victims in these banks. But they haven't outlined, they haven't given a timetable of when, but they promised they would repay them, all of their principal.
Amanda, you mentioned these people are talking to international media about the scandal. What about in China? Is the story being reported by state media?
Here and there. But the July 10th clash was not reported. And it was actually censored when the videos and pictures were circulating on social media. They were censored, so they were quickly removed. When I spoke to some of these depositors, they were actually quite happy that, we are from outside of China. And so we were able to report on it. And they wanted to share with us their story.
So have you been talking to these people since then? Have they got their money back yet?
I have. Unfortunately, those depositors that I spoke to, all of them had over 50,000 yuan of deposits in the banks. So they haven't received all of their savings back. Some of them were very suspicious of how the local governments are handling this. So they were asked to register their bank details, transaction amount, transaction date. And they didn't want to do it because they said that they didn't trust the local governments. So they didn't think the local governments were on their side. So those guys haven't actually received anything at all.
What about those people who were dressed in white and attacked the protesters? What do we know about them?
We haven't been told who these guys are. There were no confirmations, and there were no signs of, you know, whether there was an investigation of what happened on the day from the authorities. So unfortunately, we don't know much about it at this point in time.
This is not the first scandal with small rural banks. Do you think this is a one-off in terms of banking scandals, or is there a risk that this incident will lead to a crisis of confidence and lead to runs on other small banks in other provinces?
A lot of the Chinese small banks have some kind of connections to the local government. It was mostly because the way they were set up. For example, in some of the Henan banks that are in the news, their majority shareholder is another rural bank that was majority owned and controlled by a local government financing vehicle. So that vehicle, it's kind of like, think of it like a commercial company that's owned by the local government. It speaks very clearly to the savers because they would just connect it with the local government straight away. So that's why, you know, this is a very important story, because that would mean to a lot of these savers, we don't trust the government. There's a confidence issue here. There's mistrust. So it isn't very good for the local governments here. So they want to manage the crisis. First of all, they agreed to repay the savers fully, but we don't know when that's going to happen. They have not said when, but there's a reputation risk going on. And so that would spread to other banks. And that's another part, was the property market, because of their exposure to the property market. We know that the property market has been in trouble for quite some time now. We see property sales are going down, property developers are defaulting on their debt. So the situation is getting worse.
So what are your sources telling you about it? Is this worse than Evergrande? What's the level of concern on finance and property circles?
The problem with the property market is that the sentiment's really weak. Now that a lot of these developers are not able to finish their projects, to complete the construction, you know, no buyers are going to be investing in these properties, because as soon as they take out a loan, they're not going to be able to finish the construction. So, you know, then their payment will go down to drain. So that is a situation that has been ongoing, and it has got worse. As a result, we see some of these homeowners are saying, well, we're not going to continue with our mortgage payments because our houses are never going to get completed. And so they are doing that. They've written a lot of these petition letters. So these are sort of groups of homeowners that have bought into a particular development, and they said that we're not going to continue to pay for our mortgage because the banks have not done their job to supervise these payments, and they continue to give developers who are in financial trouble, who are never going to be able to finish these properties, money. And so, you know, it's not fair to us because we are paying as well, but we're not going to see our houses completed. So you've got that going on as well. Many, many homeowners are affected.
Well, this is something entirely separate from Henan. It's being described as a mortgage strike, and it sounds much, much bigger than the Henan scandal. We'll be right back after this.
As critical news stories emerging from China continue to shape lives and business around the world, the weekly SCMP Global Impact Newsletter brings you expert analyses and insights on the economics of COVID-19, society, technology, and the environment. Sign up to receive your weekly email at scmp.com/newsletters.
Something you need to know about the Chinese economy. There's a huge amount of money invested in real estate. Roughly 70% of China's household wealth. That's about 2 trillion yuan, or about $300 billion. For comparison, about 40% of household wealth is invested in American real estate. And buying a home in China is a bit different to how it's done in the West. In China, people take out mortgages and put their money down on apartments in buildings that are yet to be built. And more often than not, the whole family goes in on the deposit and mortgage. In the US, Australia, Europe, it's the newlywed couple saving up for a deposit. But in China, it's a family affair. your sister, your brother, your uncle, everyone gets asked to contribute. Now, normally, this system works fine. But as of last year and the Evergrande debt default, many more developers have found that they have run out of money, leaving unfinished skeletons of building projects across China, while at the same time, the value of these projects are dropping. Last week, the property research firm China Index Academy published figures that show prices for new homes in 100 cities plunged more than 40% in the first half of this year, compared with the same period last year. Now, do you see what's fueling the anger in this mortgage strike? People are not only paying huge mortgages on half-finished apartment buildings where construction has stopped. They're watching the value of these buildings drop day by day. The latest information on the mortgage strike in China is that it has now spread to more than 300 projects in 90 cities. At the start of this podcast, I warned you that the story was developing, and during the past days of recording and editing this episode, sure enough, things have changed. With me is Pearl Liu from SCMP Business Desk. She's been following the story and talking to people who refuse to pay any more money on these unfinished apartment buildings. Let's start with some deeper context. People are refusing to make any more mortgage payments because building developers have essentially run out of money and stopped working. Can you give us an idea of how many of these projects have stopped?
Sure. Based on our interviews and calculation, there are 18 out of 25 distressed developers that have at least one unfinished project. And based on CGS, CIMB Securities, there are some 1.1 million unfinished homes across the country.
So it's an estimated 1.1 million apartments. How many developers are in trouble now?
So recently, Rongshine China Holdings became the 19th developer that's defaulted, which means it failed to pay its interest on offshore bond, while there are another six that has applied for deadline extension.
We've heard reports that a large group of people refusing to pay their mortgage have posted their reason why they're doing this online. And much of this has been deleted by the central government. But Pearl, you've been talking directly to some of these people. What have they been telling you?
So I talked to this guy in Zhengzhou who has already signed a public letter not to pay the mortgage. He is now paying 4,000 a month for the mortgage for over 3 years. But still, he has not received his home. Well, when he visited the construction site, not so many workers there. So he asked himself, so why am I paying this and what is for?
So we've heard about the social credit system in China. Are these people you're talking to worried that the system is going to punish them for not paying their mortgage?
Yeah, there is one woman that I talked to in Chengdu who said that she cannot sign those public letters and who has to continue pay because her husband is a civil servant. If they sign anything of that or stage demonstration, her husband's job will be in danger.
What are you seeing or reading from social media?
I think after those public letters were circulated online, there are more home buyers started to worry about their own homes because before they might be just individuals who are seeing their buildings not being constructed. And now they're seeing actually there are more people going through the same experience. And I guess there will be more people considering such approach, for example, talking to the banks about their mortgage cut or like mortgage extension.
So let's talk about Beijing's response. On Sunday, we saw a special announcement from the central bank. And in the past 1 or 2 days, we've had reports of a special intervention from Beijing for those people refusing to pay their mortgages. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so on Sunday, Beijing started to instruct banks to give more credits to those developers so that they can have enough money to finish those unfinished homes. And over the past couple of days, I've seen some local governments starting to summon the local banks as well as the developers to set up meeting to see how to solve those problems.
What about the reports of no penalties for people not paying their mortgages? I've heard about things like grace period.
Yeah, there are some rumors going around, and I think that is what the home buyers are looking for. But so far, as I talked to those home buyers already signed those public letters, they say that no words are heard from their local governments and their developers.
Pearl, can you just give us the latest on this? Is the strike continuing to grow in size?
I think the home buyers have already signed the public letters. They are kind of taking a wait and see approach. They hope that something can happen in the coming months to see whether the construction can be resumed or at least partially resumed. Their ultimate goal is not really to cut the mortgage. Their ultimate goal is to get their homes.
We'll be watching your reports in the days to come on scmp.com. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Holly.
That's all for this week's Inside China. It's great to be back in your podcast feed after a longer than expected break. Remember, Amanda Lee and the team in Beijing, as well as our specialist property market journalists, are closely following this story. You can read their latest stories and analysis on scmp.com. Don't forget to follow the SCMP Newsroom on Twitter at SCMP News. And as the new wave of Omicron is spreading around the world, remember, get your booster, keep the mask on, stay safe. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.